Your Locked On NHL, your daily podcast on the National Hockey League. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right. It is the Friday edition of the Locked On NHL podcast, and you're seeing a different combination of faces today if you're watching on YouTube, and you'll hear different combination of voices if you are listening to the show. I am Rachel Donner of the Locked On Flyers podcast, and today I am here with Mike DiStefano of Locked On Leafs, who is sitting in for Sneaky Joe DiBiase. And I said this when we did a crossover on our shows, but it bears repeating. I feel like we're Locked On NHL cousins because Joe DiBiase is our mutual family member here.
Yes, because he and I do the show on Tuesdays. But Joe got the sniffles a little bit, felt a little under the weather, and asked if someone could step up. And I said, I got your back, Joe. I could do it. I'll go and I'll have a good chat with Rachel. So excited to be here on a Friday instead of a Tuesday for once.
Yes, absolutely. I'm on Twitter at @rmiriam. Mike is on Twitter at @Mickey_Canuck. Thanks for making us your first listen every day. We are free and available on all podcasting platforms, and you can watch us over on YouTube. On today's show, we are going to just take a whirl around the league and maybe focus a little bit on like what makes a great individual goal, and then play a little game of, is it sustainable? And then we're going to talk a little bit about prospect development theory and then look ahead to the games this weekend. All right, so Sidney Crosby scored his first goal of the season. It was his fourth game played in the 6-0 Pens defeat of Montreal on Thursday night. And it just feels so weird to think that towards Thanksgiving, we're just getting our first Sidney Crosby goal.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, it has been a very great year for Sidney Crosby, not because he's not performing, but because he hasn't been on the ice, right? He had the injury that he was out for right to start the season. And then I believe it was his first game back. And then he ends up on the COVID list. And then he misses a handful of games due to that. And just finally able to get his first goal here last night. But I always say the league is always in much better hands when Sidney Crosby is out there making highlight reel-esque goals. I wouldn't say last night's goal was highlight reel-esque by any means, but
it's a good tic-tac-toe kind of play, but it wasn't like a Crosby special.
It wasn't a McDavid special, that's for sure. Yeah. That's the one that was on the highlight reels all night long. But it is bizarre the fact that, you know, we're 6 weeks or so into the season and Crosby's getting his first of the year.
Well, you know, you just mentioned that Connor McDavid goal, and man, another defense destroying or demoralizing goal, this time against the Winnipeg Jets. I'm sure you've seen it by now, but if you haven't, go take a look at it. We'll put a link to the video of it in the show notes on the podcast side of things. And man, like, you think this guy can do anything, but to do anything twice is just extraordinary.
I know. For me, it's just like the way that he says to himself, oh, I can beat these guys. Like, I can split three dudes through the neutral zone. And just like within an instant, he goes from basically just not skating, just kind of assessing the situation, to, all right, here we go. And then away he goes, like his change of direction and the speed in which he cut through the neutral zone in both of these goals, and then just dance through defenders and ends up dancing through the goaltender as well, is just unbelievable. Like, it's just ridiculous. So at the end of the year, we're going to go through and, you know, they always do the top 10 goals of the year. Honestly, yeah, I feel like
it's going to be all McDavid.
And McDavid goals this season. Here it is. These are the top 10 goals. Like at the ESPYs where they look at best hockey goal, I guarantee you it's just going to be a montage of McDavid's. And it's like, okay, well, here's the winner. It's Connor McDavid. And here are the 18 highlight reel goals he had this season. Like it's just ridiculous what this guy can do. Which one did you like better, though? The one against the Rangers a couple of weeks ago, or did you like this one against the Jets better last night?
Well, the one against the Rangers, there were four guys, if I recall correctly.
There was.
So maybe that one's a little better, but it's still unreal.
Here's the difference between those two goals for me, though. Like, A came from a bit of a far. So on that one, he was basically at the blue line, or I guess in at least he was in the Rangers zone when he decided to put the Jets on. And it didn't seem like I meant to put on the wheels against the Rangers. Bit of a weird way to say that. But anyway, it didn't seem like the Rangers defended it as well as they could have, like didn't put a body on him, didn't really try to even put a stick on him. They were kind of as mesmerized as we all were when he was like, okay, I'm going to come and beat you. And they're like, wait, what? And next thing you know, the puck's in the back of the net. The Jets, you know, they tried to stick check him and tried to do something. Like there's a shot of like three guys going for the poke check, but you know, he just basically dangles right through them and puts it, you know, into the back of the net. So they're a little bit different for me, but I'm with you. I think the Ranger one.
So I want to talk about another goal that happened, of course, way eclipsed by that Connor McDavid goal, and rightfully so, mostly because I'm biased and I'm a Flyers person and I love Claude Giroux. And he had an incredible goal in the first period, just completely deking Vasilevsky of Tampa Bay. And it was just a sight to behold. And it got me thinking in terms of, you know, what kind of individual effort goal is your favorite? Is it undressing a defense like McDavid did? Or is it a great, you know, individual move on a goalie goal like Giroux did? Or maybe it's like a weird sharp angle goal off the goalie's back. Do you have like a favorite kind of individual effort goal?
Like a Michigan style. Yeah, I mean, there's some interesting ways that people can score nowadays. They're finding new ways to score. It's incredible the skill level of these young guys coming into the league. And the fact that, you know, I'm at a point in my life where I could say these young guys coming into the league does make me feel old. Wow. But it's true. But for me, it's
trust me, I could be a lot of their mothers. Exactly. It's very creepy.
Right. But no, for me, honestly, it's still just beating the goaltender is one thing, but like that's usually you're just beating one guy. When you go through an entire team and stick handle through three, four guys, and then the goalie at that, I mean, that's just a whole nother level of individual effort and just outstanding play. So I got to give it to like the way that McDavid scores his goals, the way that, you know, those couple of highlight reel goals over the last couple of weeks, those are the ones that I appreciate most because it's going through like four or five guys. It's crazy.
I probably ultimately agree with you. I think my only kind of argument for the individual move goal, like what Giroux did, is that, you know, at least with what McDavid did, like nobody expects you to get through. And the goaltender is probably expecting one of those defensemen to do something. Whereas when you have like that one-on-one move, all eyes are on both of you. And it's like, who's going to give? And I think like the drama of those moments maybe is a little bit more at the time that it's happening as opposed to after the goal that McDavid did. You just want to watch that again and again and again.
But if you are a goaltender and you see Connor McDavid barreling down through the neutral zone into your defensive zone.
Yeah.
You're not assuming that he's going
to. That's also fair.
You are assuming this guy is going to deke around the entire team and it's going to end up being you versus him at the end of the day. And if you're not thinking that, there's no way you have a chance at stopping the puck, though.
That's true. All right. So let's move on to, I wish I had a theme song for this game show. Like, is it sustainable? Just like imagine. Yes. Just imagine that happening right now. So there's been like a few things going on in the NHL right now, which seem too good to be true, but yet keep moving along. So we want to just talk about, are these things sustainable? And the first thing I want to talk about is the Troy Terry point streak. And, you know, we got to hand it to the Ducks. They're having a really successful season thus far. And Troy Terry is a big part of that. And he continued his point streak to 16 games on Thursday night. And he has 12 goals, 10 assists, 22 points, which is third all time in Ducks history as far as point streaks go. And, you know, he is second in the league in goals and fourth in scoring. Is this sustainable?
No. simple answer. I do not believe so. I mean, Troy Terry's an extremely talented player. Don't get me wrong. But, like, the fact that he's scoring at an unbelievable rate, he's every single night, it seems like. He's, what, second in the league in goals, tied for second in goals? I don't think this is sustainable. No, this is a really good run. This is a great run for Troy Terry. He's putting up 22 points, over a point per game, and the guy's on pace for nearly 100 points. I just don't see that out of Troy Terry. I don't see that out of this Ducks team. I don't know if they can provide the type of offense to allow him to put up that type of production. Everything's going well right now for them. But the second that they hit somewhat of a rut, I think it could go south. You know, like, it's still a pretty young team. They do got some, you know, some older vets with some good head on their shoulders. I'll say that. But at the end of the day, this is an unbelievable run that this kid is on. He deserves all the credit, all the discussion, the flowers that he's getting. But to suggest that he's going to keep going at this rate the rest of the season, to me, would be foolish. So I'm going to go with a fat no.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you there. But I just wonder, with him in particular, with the other ones, I have less doubt on this front. But in terms of when it ends, like, will he be able to at least keep being a pretty solid scorer?
Let me check and see. I probably should have done this. This is on me for not being as prepared as I should have been as a host. But let me see what his shooting percentage is, because I would bet his shooting percentage is out of this league right now. He's shooting a 27% clip, whereas before, you know, last year he was at 10% in his first basically full season in the NHL. The year before was at 5.5%. I believe he split that year in the minors as well a little bit. And then at 16% the year before that. So, you know, I would expect that it probably would fall in the range of a 12% shooter his career. He's operating at basically 28% right now, just based on percentages and the law of averages. You got to think that goal scoring is going to dry up a little bit here down the stretch. Or not even down the stretch. We're not even a quarter way through the season. So through the bulk of the remainder of the year.
So the next one on this list is the Alex Ovechkin scoring pace. He has just, I think, even though everybody knows he's going for that record, I think he has outpaced people's expectations on just the volume of his scoring at this early rate. You know, he's got 26 points now, 12 goals so far. We all know he's gunning for that record, and he has to make up for some lost time here. But do we think, you know, given his age and given how the Caps are playing overall, is his scoring pace sustainable?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, his scoring pace is 100% sustainable. He's still one of the best players in the NHL. Like, and you know, 12 goals through 17 games. I mean, I think this is pretty well on pace for something that he's been able to do the rest of, you know, his whole career, a 50 goal scorer. I mean, he's not the best in the world for a reason, you know what I mean? And if we take a look at the shooting percentage once again, he's only shooting at a 16% rate, which is pretty on par with what he's done the last few years. 13% last year, but 15% the year before that, 15% the year before that. You know, this guy has been a beacon of consistency when it comes to scoring goals, and it comes to having a really quality shooting percentage. He shoots at a high volume as well. Just take a look. He's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of the last 8 years. And realistically, last year was a shortened season. So you can even look at that and say 7 of the last full seasons, he's had over 300, nearly 400 shots on goal. So when you're shooting at that type of clip, when you have, you average around 15 or so percent shooting, yeah, I think you definitely are going to be in the Rocket Richard race. I think 12 goals at this rate through 17 games, certainly something he could replicate the rest of the way. I think it's certainly sustainable.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you brought up a lot of the stats that I was going to go to next in terms of his shooting percentage and his season over season productivity just shows that he can do this. And as long as he stays in decent shape, doesn't get hurt, and the Caps put enough around him to allow him to just have his spot, I think he'll be fine. And I think he'll make up a little bit of that ground that has been lost. All right, the last in our Is It Sustainable game show is the Oilers in first place in the Pacific. Is that sustainable?
Like, maybe it's sustainable. Like, I never want to bet against Connor McDavid is the problem. But I don't think that they're the best team in the Pacific. I think Calgary has put together a pretty strong bunch. I like what they're doing out there. Markstrom is having an incredible season. I like the team. That's probably the team that I think would be the biggest threat to them winning the Pacific. The other big threat is today, some news coming down in the last hour or so of us recording this podcast. It looks like Darnell Nurse has been placed on the IR, so he's going to be out for quite some time with an injury too. And Darnell Nurse is so massive for this club, and it looks like Mike Smith is getting placed on LTIR. So no Mike Smith, no Darnell Nurse. The goaltending is going to be suspect as is. Do we expect Draisaitl and McDavid to operate at a 175 to 200 point clip the rest of the way? I don't know if that's the case. So for them to sustain this first place pace, they would have to kind of just keep chugging along as if everything's perfect, everything's rosy the way that it's been early on this season. But they got the Calgary Flames, who are right on their heels at 9-3-5 on the year. They're getting excellent goaltending. They're getting some production all throughout the lineup. Andrew Mangiapane's having an unreal season. So I think that I don't know. I'm 50-50 on it. Because, like, is it sustainable? Yeah, I guess it could be sustainable. But I think that they got a bit of an uphill climb based on some of the injuries and how well things have gone early on.
Every team, or most teams, go through a little bit of a lull at some point in the season. And when you have a blow like this to your defense, when your goaltending isn't that great, those top two guys are going to have to pot a lot of goals, like 4 and up per game, I would think, in order to keep the win streaks going and get rack up enough points in order to keep this going, to keep them atop the division. Like you said, it's not impossible. Like, I think, you know, given what we've seen so far, they could do it, and it'll depend on just who's peaking at the right time and then what the matchups are and what the interdivisional games are at that time to keep the Oilers afloat. So I'm kind of with you that it's very probable, but it's also like there are other options out there, like Calgary, like you just said. So
also, what happens if this power play that's operating at 40% right now goes on a bit of a cold streak? Are they still going to win as many games as they have been? Maybe not.
No.
Right?
Yeah.
They've relied a lot on special team success, just taking a look. So they're, 40% on the power play, but 88% on the penalty kill too. So if their special team success takes a bit of a slide, and then you don't get the ungodly numbers from McDavid and Draisaitl, which I'm not going to bet against it, but if that happens, it's going to be tough for this team to win games.
Absolutely. And, you know, you were just talking about Calgary and their shot at being atop the division. They are racking up points in my least favorite way. This is the thing I keep track of is loser points, because I don't like them. But so right now, Washington and Calgary are tied in the NHL for the most loser points with 5. So we'll see if that will help Calgary and boost them to take over the Pacific Division leader spot. And, you know, we will come back after a quick break and talk about some prospect development theory.
Yes. So before we do that, let's give a shout out to our show sponsor today, Built Bar. I mean, I love Thanksgiving, all the good food and treats and plenty of them, but maybe you want a yummy dessert, but isn't so full of calories and sugar. It's a perfect time for Built Bars. Built Bar is the new holiday dessert. Feast on something delicious and feel good about it One slice of pie is upwards of 300 calories, and that's on the low end. Most Built Bars are only 130 calories and only 4 grams of sugar with plenty of protein. Replace that coconut cream pie with a coconut Built Bar, or go for a raspberry Built Bar instead of a raspberry pie. Lots of good flavors to replace any type of pie. Low calorie, low carb, low fat, high protein, and covered in 100% real chocolate. Built is a great option for when hungry. If Thanksgiving isn't coming soon enough, go for a Built Bar or two. Share some at your family gatherings. It'll make things less awkward. Maybe Aunt Betty hasn't tried a Built Bar yet. There'll be new surprises all month long with limited time flavors arriving at Built.com regularly. So check the site often, and there's nothing like a Built Bar Black Friday. Mark your calendar. Black Friday will be a huge event with all sorts of surprises. Go to Built.com. Use the promo code Locked15. You'll get 15% off your order. Use promo code Locked15 for 15% off at Built.com.
All right. We are back. And, you know, this has been an interesting week when it comes to call-ups and people getting sent down. Most recently, I think the biggest story in the NHL related to this is Cole Caulfield and the Montreal Canadiens. Obviously, the Canadiens have been struggling mightily this season, and Cole Caulfield has also struggled a little bit, you know, at the beginning of the season when he was with the Canadiens. Preseason, a lot of people had him pegged for their Calder pick. A lot of pressure on him.
Yeah, I've got a couple of bets at betonline.ag, a couple of dollars on him becoming the Calder winner, and I'm not so sure those are going to pay off anymore.
Yeah, so, you know, he got one assist in 10 games at the beginning of the season, so the Habs sent him down to Laval, and he played 6 games down there. He scored twice, and 3 assists, not too shabby in 6 games, 5 points in 6 games. And so they decided to bring him back up. And so that got me thinking a little bit about prospect management philosophy and, you know, what are the conditions that you send somebody who's struggling down, who's an ELC level prospect, obviously, because you don't want to have to deal with waivers in this discussion, but you know, when do you send someone down? And then when is it good enough to call them back up? Or if you start somebody in the AHL for developmental reasons that there just isn't room on the roster right at this time, when do you call them up? Like, what is the production you're expecting from them to call them back up? So Cole Caulfield obviously is that first prime example. For me on the Flyers side, it's Morgan Frost. I think people thought he was a lock to make the Flyers, or pretty close lock to make the Flyers preseason, or at least in the offseason before they made some of the moves on depth signings. And then they did not keep him on the team. He's been playing with Lehigh Valley. Lehigh Valley has been struggling, but he's been playing pretty decently and gotten progressively better. And there was an opportunity for a call-up to last night's game. He didn't get it. Max Willman got that call up, and not undeservedly, but it's just an interesting conversation. So, like, what are your criteria for sending someone down or calling them up?
Yeah, I mean, this is such a loaded question and like a really good conversation to have, though. But I think there's a few factors that go into it. I think when you look at, and I think every player, into every individual and every team, it could be different, you know. So I don't know if there's, you know, a one size fits all in prospect management. But, you know, if we do take a look at this Cole Caulfield example, I think it was a combination of the team wasn't playing well, he wasn't playing well, and they kind of just need to build his confidence up a little bit. And so I think they sent him down to the minors, got him away from the toxicity of a, you know, a poor Montreal team that's been just awful. Send him down to Laval, get him to find his goal scoring touch, see the puck go into the back of the net and build up his confidence. And then after doing that for a few games, scored a couple of goals, had 5 points through 6 games, they decided to bring him back up and see if you know, that worked, see if that helped him. I agree with the move. I think that was a good management move to kind of get him out of the situation a little bit, get him some more playing time, get him to up his confidence a little bit. So I thought that the Montreal Canadiens did a pretty good service to Cole Caulfield and how they managed it. But then you can take a look at around the league at some other individuals. Like I look at a guy like Vasily Podkolzin in Vancouver, was only averaging about like 11 minutes a game playing on the fourth line, not getting much playing time early in the season. He was only getting 8-9 minutes. And it's like, wouldn't he be better off served playing down in the minors, being a go-to type of guy, you know, as opposed to being an 8-9? Now he's up to playing about 13-14, so it's helped. But at the time, it was like, why are you having this kid around? I mean, send him down to the minors, get him to learn how to play a pro-style North American game since he came over from the KHL last season. Like, I think that would be best for his development. Clearly, they thought differently. So it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. But what I will say about Podkolzin after watching a couple of games is they opted to not send him down. They kept him around. And his ice time eventually increases. He proved to the team that he can handle the workload. And he's actually looked pretty good the last couple of days. So he was in a situation where he was able to develop kind of on the fly in the NHL and progress as a player. So, like I said, I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all. I think it's depending on the individual, depending on how the team's doing, how the player's doing, the mindset, the fragility of the team, of the player. I think there's a lot of different factors that come into it.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely, you know, a case-by-case basis. I think, you know, for me, the question that I ask pretty frequently is the situation the player's in good for them individually in terms of the success of the overall team? Because with Caulfield, it's interesting because the Habs have been playing so poorly. And even when he left, they did not get better, right? Yeah. So it's like when you're calling him back up, it's into a pretty dire situation in Montreal, and is that good for him? Even though Laval is fine, they're not good, they're not great, they're not the worst, right? So there's going to be a mix of success and losses there. But I just don't know if you're putting somebody in a winning environment, is that better for them ultimately? And is that, should that trump the individual play? And I just think about that, you know, again, with Morgan Frost, that he has been playing pretty well. You know, he racks up assists. He's a pass first guy, so he's not going to have a ton of goals, but he is a great playmaker. And he is, you know, not really, at least in the official conversation for a call up, but Lehigh Valley is in the basement of the AHL. I think they're the second worst team in the AHL right now. They just can't put wins together at all. And so is like a negative environment bad for his development? And the Flyers, again, not the best, not the worst, you know, putting together some solid games, but is a stint with the Flyers something, you know, to be around some wins, something that will enhance his progression? I think so.
Yeah, I think so. What you would have to weigh is if he does get called up to the Flyers, okay, he's around winning, you know, teams that's doing well, and you're around, you know, pros, you're picking up pro habits, you're somewhat learning the game. But the question is, where does he fit in the lineup if he gets called up? And is that better for him? Like, you know, when I look at, you know, some players, they'll play, you know, the fourth line or whatever, they may be better off playing a more top role in the NHL. Morgan Frost, I think, is a playmaker. He's a really good offensive player. He's not a guy who, I don't believe, maybe you could tell me if I'm wrong, but someone who they envision to be a top six guy instead of a bottom six guy. So if there's no top six role for him at a time where they're looking to call somebody up and they have to kind of stick him in the bottom six, maybe that could be a little bit detrimental to his development. So I guess the question that I have for you is there a spot that fits for Morgan if he does get called up that would kind of work well for both sides?
I think there could be, especially now that Kevin Hayes is out again. I think there's room to shuffle to put Morgan Frost on the third line, let's say. I think Morgan Frost is a middle six guy. I don't think he's a top line guy, but I think there's room for a guy like him on a second or third line in the NHL eventually. Like if he reaches the potential that I think he can. And I think there's, you know, some shuffling going on now related to Kevin Hayes being out. And I think there's a spot for him. I think the Max Willman call up, you can throw him on the fourth line and it's fine. And that's what they decided to do. It's just a matter of if Alain Vigneault is willing to go there with him and give him that shot.
Right. So it's somewhat role based, right? Where Wellman probably more of a bottom six guy. So he fits the role a lot better in that situation. An interesting one, though, in Toronto here with the Maple Leafs is Timothy Liljegren, who's currently a healthy scratch, just kind of sitting up in the press box watching some of these games. And there's someone filtering in, actually, the bottom pair. There's like three guys who are kind of just filtering in, him, Sandin, and Liljegren, Travis Dermott. And I often wonder to myself, like, is this best for Liljegren to have him kind of sitting in the press box? Like, yeah, he's around NHL talent, but like, if he's not playing on a nightly basis and he's not playing top minutes, I mean, is that what's best for a 22-year-old kid who's still looking to, you know, improve and still looking to develop?
Yeah, and another recent call-up that just happened, Sean Durzi just got called up from the Ontario Reign for the LA Kings. He spent a few years in the AHL at this point. He's 23 years old, but right now he's, you know, second in defensemen in scoring. He's got 13 points in 12 games. So, you know, I think, like, this is a case where just the outright production is earning him this call up, and you know, we'll see what he does at the NHL level, but I'm excited to see what he could do in particular.
Yeah, there's actually one more who I think really fits the bill here in the conversation that we're having where production earned a call up. Scott Perunovic of the St. Louis Blues. He was a second round pick back in 2018, played that in college at the Minnesota Duluth, and then this was his first pro season. And he started out in the AHL with the Blues in Springfield, had 20 points in 12 games as a defenseman in his first year of pro hockey, 2 goals, 18 assists, 20 points in 12 games. Yeah, the Blues had no choice but to bring this guy up and give him an opportunity. Got his first point, got an assist last night in his second game with the Blues. So that's another example of, you know, them realizing like, hey, maybe this kid who's now 23, spent a couple of seasons in college and you know, was a little bit older than the average rookie, maybe he is ready and you know, he could develop on the fly in the NHL as opposed to in the minors.
Yeah, we shall see with him. And this is just such an interesting discussion. And there's no like perfect science to it. And so I'm always intrigued how like different people approach it and how different teams approach it. And, you know, whether we'll see any more call-ups or send-downs this season that will be as shocking as it was to a lot of the hockey community for Cole Caulfield. But I do wonder if there's like a betting line you could put on that with some top prospects, like which NHL game number over under will be there first in a particular season. Is that a thing?
There's not that, but you could bet on Calder odds for Rookie of the Year. And I mean, if Scott Perunovic, and I'll call Caulfield, was up there as the top guy going into this season, you could still lay a wager over at BetOnline if you feel like that's the case. Maybe Scott Perunovic has a strong season, or Sean Durzi, or maybe my guy Mike Bunting up here in Toronto. You know, there's a bunch of guys that you could place a wager on over at BetOnline.ag.
Yeah, and BetOnline is back and better than ever. They have a new web interface for the start of basketball season and NHL season. They've got more props, odds, and lines than ever before. BetOnline remains your number one spot for all the basketball and football and hockey action this season. Head to the new updated desktop or mobile website to sign up today, and you'll receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use the promo code LOCKEDON to receive that bonus. Whether it's basketball, football, hockey, boxing, UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait and take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, Mike, so we've got, you know, an exciting slate of games ahead this weekend. First, I just want to touch on the power rankings from the Locked On NHL hosts. I know they talk about it on the Thursday show, but Joe and I like to just, you know, take a second look at it and see where we're scratching our heads or where we are pleased.
Yeah. All right. So let's take a peek and see kind of what's going on here. I'll tell you what I do appreciate is the love coming to the Toronto Maple Leafs right now, vaulting up to fourth. And I got to tell you, I mean, They've won 10 of their last 11 games, and they're playing a true brand of hockey that can win the playoffs too. They had a great win against the Predators the other night, 3-0. They just kind of scored early and shut it down, didn't allow them to do anything, and then beat the Rangers as well, who are coming in on a 4-game winning streak. Currently see them in 7th in our power rankings. One of the ones that surprised me a little bit, I would say, I'm still quite why are the what's the team I'm looking for here? Why I had it here just a moment ago. Oh,
I would guess the Rangers.
Well, the Rangers, I think you don't like the Rangers being that high. Me, it's the Ducks. That's right. I mean, like the Ducks, I know they're riding high, but if we're talking about an NHL power rankings, do you really look at the Ducks and say this is a top 8 team in the NHL? No, not at all. No, that's wrong. Wrong. And they came up from, what were they? They were 22nd last year or last week. So from 22nd to 8th. Yeah, they won a great run. But this is not a top 8 team in the NHL. Come on now.
Well, they're playing like it at the moment. So, if we're looking at these as a snapshot in time, I think this is a reasonable spot for them. If we're looking at a bigger picture, I think you're probably right there. That maybe they're a little bit further down. Maybe where the Flyers are right now at lucky 13, creeping up the rankings a little bit. I don't know if it's 100% deserved, to be honest. I think they're kind of a mixed bag right now. But it's good to see the respect, I guess.
The Islanders, to me, are a team that's fallen a little bit too much.
I hate to say it because I am a known Islanders hater, even though our friend Gil over at Lockdown Islanders is like one of the nicest humans on this planet.
Totally.
But
king of the Lockdown Nows, Gil.
Yes. Yes. But yeah, I think they're way better than 24.
Well, here's the thing with the Islanders, and I think actually it might be tonight. It's either tonight or tomorrow night. They play their first home game of the season.
Yeah.
They started the season on a 13-game road trip. And they were cooking. They were doing fine up until about a week ago, and they've lost their last 4 straight. But they just ran out of gas. Could you imagine being on the road for 6 weeks to start the year? It is brutal. Now, I for those who are unaware of the situation, it's because they're having a new stadium built, and it wasn't going to be ready until now, mid-November. So that's the reason why they were on, such a long road trip to start the season. But the fact that they came out of it basically a 500 team, to me, is actually rather impressive. And like I said, up until about a week ago, they were doing really well. Like, they're right up in there in the mix, up at the top of the Metro. But that Metro division is a tough, tough, tough division. But for the Islanders to fall from 15 and down to 24th in the power rankings, to me, I think that's just a little bit too low, but I suppose it depends on how you look at these. See, how do you look at these? Because when I do them, I do it based on, I look at the season as a whole. So I don't move teams up and down too much. I look at them as a whole. How has their season been? And that's how I, my lens on power rankings typically, as opposed to a week-to-week snapshot. So how do you look at that? Because that's how I think I get confused by some of these rankings.
Yeah, I think for me, I look at kind of I put them in order of the points percentage. Mm-hmm. And then I think secondarily about that big picture and be like, is this sustainable? No. Or yes. Or is this losing streak indicative? So I start off where they are now, and then I adjust a little bit based on what I think the season is going to look like for that team.
So it's your fault that the Sabres were a top 10 team the first week.
No. I made a big adjustment on the Sabres.
Yeah.
Sorry, Joe.
Yeah. We got to throw some slander for him missing today's show. But they have rightfully dropped. They keep dropping. They dropped to 21st last week and then dropped to 26th this week, which is probably actually now they're right about where I think they are. The Coyotes in last place makes total sense. The Senators being dropped to last place is kind of to 31st, kind of a slap in the face because, they haven't played all week. And it's kind of unfortunate that they've had to play with 13 regulars out of their lineup the last little bit due to COVID and injuries. The Kraken have not been good. The Blackhawks have not been good. The Canadiens and the Canucks have been horrible as well. And Jim Benning even came out and had to talk and kind of put out some fires a little bit, although I didn't feel he did. Did you happen to read any of Benning's comments? I know we're going a little bit off topic here, but yesterday he came out and he spoke with media, and it didn't really sound great, to be honest.
Yeah, we talked about it on last Friday's show in terms of, you know, what's the potential next coach to get fired.
Yeah.
And, you know, Vancouver came up, but my hesitancy to have that as a solid pick is that they just don't fire anybody there.
That is true. That's a very, very solid counterpoint. Yes. But I mean, it's brutal out in Vancouver right now.
You did mention the Islanders are having their first home game at the new arena in Belmont on Saturday night. That's part of like a nice batch of games on Saturday night. Friday's schedule is a little bit light, nothing super interesting, but that Flames versus Islanders game in Belmont should be pretty fun, except there's an interesting twist in a not so great way. A few Islanders are on the COVID list for their team, so it's kind of spoil that homecoming a little bit with Anders Lee, Ross Johnson, and Josh Bailey.
Yeah, and Anders Lee, your captain, so that's really unfortunate that he might not be there for the start in their first building. But they've got a back to back too, because then they got Toronto on Sunday, so they're going to get good use of that home building their first weekend there, that's for sure.
Yeah, as a resident of Queens, that is now the closest arena to where I live, so I'm very excited to check it out. Another game I'm excited about is the Canes versus the LA Kings on Saturday night. I think, you know, given how well the Kings have been playing generally this season, versus the Canes, who are one of the top in the league, I think that should be a really good matchup.
Yeah, I agree. That should be really fun. I mean, anytime I can watch the Carolina Hurricanes, I think I want to. Like, they're just a really fun team to watch. Sebastian Aho, Andrei Svechnikov, Tara Vinen. You got some grit in guys like Jordan Staal. You know, their back end, Jacob Slavin's an absolute stud. And then, you know, my ex in Freddie Anderson having quite a season over there with Carolina as well. And yeah, the Kings, they're cooking pretty good early on. They're another one of those teams where it's like, is the bubble going to burst at some point? Because no one was expecting the Kings and the Ducks and to be, you know, among the top 10 of the league early on in the season, but they seem to be hanging around a little bit. You think, we talk about sustainability, are the Kings and the way that they're playing sustainable?
I just think the expectations have been so low there that they're just going to keep riding on it. And they're not like, I think they'll do well, but not be atop the division or like threaten.
7-2-1.
They're borderline playoffs, I think.
7-2-1 in their last 10. They've been really, really good.
Another great matchup Saturday, the Wild versus the Panthers, two division leaders face to face. That'll be exciting.
Yes, that will be another really, really good one. Let me see if there's a game that I'm kind of circling down. I mean, is it a cop-out to say the Leafs Penguins? Is that a cop-out answer?
Not at all. You are allowed to be excited to watch your team.
I mean, here's the biggest reason why. A few weeks ago, Toronto went into Pittsburgh and got slapped by basically what was the Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins. There was no Malkin, there was no Crosby, there was no Gensel, there was no Brian Rust, there was no Chris Letang, and they still got killed 7-1. You had guys like Drew O'Connor and Evan Rodriguez looking like Mara Lemieux and Jaromir Jagr out there. It was despicable. It was disgusting. It was the worst loss I think the Maple Leafs have seen since the E-Bug debacle a couple of years ago against the Hurricanes. But tonight they can kind of right the ship. They've been playing way better hockey as of late, and I want to see them go in and kind of make it nice full circle and have them go in and beat the pants off the Pittsburgh Penguins Saturday night.
Yeah, that should be a good one as well. On Sunday, the Wild have the second part of a back-to-back, so that'll be tough for them facing the Tampa Bay Lightning.
How about the toilet bowl game between the Canucks and Blackhawks? That'll be interesting. We got a battle in New York as well between the Sabres and the Rangers. A couple of decent little games there on Sunday. I'll tell you what, though, I'm not a fan of Sunday games. I hate when they play Sunday games. I wish it was a much lighter schedule because I'm also a big football guy. and it takes away from my football watching abilities.
Yeah, I suppose that's so until the end of football season. Yeah, maybe they shouldn't have Sunday games.
They should load up the Sunday schedule from February onward, but up until February, only have a couple of games and you know, make them the teams that nobody wants to watch. I'm not going to hurt feelings and say which teams they are, but I think we all know which teams they possibly could be. And then save these good Sunday matchups for when football's over and everyone's looking for something to watch.
Well, on that bombshell from Mike, that'll do it for today's show. Thanks so much for listening. Mike's on Twitter at Mickey_Canuck. Joe will hopefully be back on Tuesday with Mike. And then Joe and I will be back next Friday with the latest NHL news. You can find me on Twitter at RMiriam. Have a great weekend, everyone. You made us your first listen today. Now make your second listen Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling.